I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
your
has been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left. Checks
2 weeks
left.
Ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Everyone, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. I'm Heather Wagenhals, your hostess with the Financiosmosis, and happy Financial Independence Day. Belated, I should say, but nonetheless, happy Financial Independence Day. Yesterday, we celebrated our third annual Declaration of Financial Independence Day on Blog Talk Radio. But I've actually been doing Financial Independence Day for several years. It actually started on a show that I was on long before this one on terrestrial radio. And the whole point was just to say, hey, we're not going to let debt and our instant gratification needs enslave us. No, we are going to claim our financial freedom, and we're going to do it now. And it's just been something that just keeps growing and growing. And if you have not seen on YouTube all of the great I Wear Your Shirt videos that they did to promote the event, plus we did giveaways on Facebook, we did fan giveaways, we did website giveaways of all kinds of stuff. One every hour is pretty exciting. So it's like the 24 hours of Daytona, only the 24 hours of financial freedom. How cool is that? So hopefully you made your way to the website at www.unlockyourwealth.com and declared your financial independence. But if you haven't, never fear. The website will always be here. And you can go claim your financial independence at any time and simply visit the website and drop your name in on the form that we have, and you will receive a custom Declaration of Financial Independence Day personalized for you. So make sure you spell your name right before you hit the submit button. That's the key. And your Declaration of Financial Independence will be one simple email away. So all you got to do is sign up for that. Plus, you'll also get our weekly radio magazine, and that's filled with all kinds of stuff. Elena DeFiore, our illustrious program director, pulls this together each and every week with tips, tricks, tools, and information, plus a list of our upcoming guests. And it's season 10. We have so many new things. I'm Heather Wagenhals, and we are broadcasting live from the UnlockYourWealth.com studios this Saturday. And I am so excited because we're starting the keys over. It's acceptance and affirmation this week. And for those of you joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. Thanks for stopping by. We're glad to have you, and your timing could not be better because it's the first key in our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series. So we have a whole litany of things that we need to discuss, plus Minutes on Your Money. And we also have Karen Lee stopping by. She's an amazing author, and she's going to talk about her new book with us. So we've got that to look forward to. Plus the key, we're going to feature the key, and we're going to talk about acceptance and affirmation and why this is the first step that you need to take when you declare your financial freedom. So things are just clipping along, and I'm pretty excited because this is a whole new format for us, and we've got all new shows coming out next week too. So instead of just having Unlock Your Wealth Radio to go on Tuesdays at 6:30, we're actually going to 3 days a week. And so we're going to go Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 6:30 a.m. It's your 15-minute cup, money motivation, to help you start your day the millionaire way. So I'm really excited about that. We feature one specific trade or tool that millionaires use in their everyday lives, and it's something that you could do right now. And all you have to do is tune in 3 days a week. Now I got to get used to saying that. We're totally in a new season, and all of this new stuff's going on. So we're going to get right into things. And this week's Minutes on Your Money is going to be about having a fun-filled 4th of July because we celebrate financial independence with our nation's independence. And how do we do it on a budget? Well, it's really simple. Typically, you can go to local fairgrounds or a water park or all kinds of other stuff to go and be a part of an event for fireworks. But wouldn't it be really cool if you could just have a picnic in a park somewhere or find some other area outside of the venue where you still get to see it and still get to barbecue and do all of the cool things that you like to do? Now, something else that's happened as an advent of our recent economic woes is that folks aren't expecting to go to events, holidays, celebrations, and things like that, especially something like 4th of July, without bringing something to the party because everybody is in dire straits and nobody expects you to cater your whole party yourself. So you could do it with BYOSD, bring your own side dish, if you will. You can create the menu and then assign it to folks. And even the folks that don't know how to cook or you don't want them to cook because they're crappy at it, you also want to be able to take and have those people contribute too. Well, guess what? They can actually take and be the paper plate, fork, knife, paper cup kind of people. So they still have a value and a purpose. So you provide the venue, but then make everybody else cook and bring stuff. And then you all have to do is clean up. You look like the fabulous party host or hostess. You get all the credit. And you don't have to waste a whole lot of money doing that either. Now, one of the things that the 4th of July brings, other than Nathan's hot dog eating contest, which I'm so excited about because hot dog used to be my middle name growing up as a kid, is that it's a big family affair. Well, how do you create that family fun on the cheap cheap? Well, all I know about Arizona is it's always hot, and we like to be kind of in the water if we're kids. And a water park at $25 a person admission is kind of pricey. So, hey, guess what? That's what hoses and sprinklers are for, and the slip and slides and plastic pools. You could totally create your own water park in your own yard on the cheap cheap, and kids don't care. I remember that my girlfriend's dad would be out watering the lawn on Saturday mornings, and he would just shoot us with the sprinkler with the hose for no reason, even though we had regular clothes on. It's not like we were in swim. So he would just squirt us, and we'd run around and, ah! So there's all kind of great things that you can do to celebrate this holiday, to make it special, and to do it on the cheap cheap. So that is all I have to say about this week's tips. If you'd like more in-depth ideas for how to become the savvy party host or hostess or the ultimate party guest, so you're always invited back, please visit unlockyourwealth.com, and there you will find all kinds of fabulous tips, tricks, and tools for the 4th of July written by the illustrious Elena de Fior. Well, I guess, you know, I'm so excited about this new format. We're picking up the pace. We're moving things around. We're dialing in things, making it more concise, so all you get are the meat and potatoes. And I'm so excited. I hope you enjoy. This is what we've gotten as feedback from listeners as to what they liked and what they'd like to see more of, and guess what? That's what you're getting. So thanks so much again for joining us. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, this Saturday, like every Saturday, at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about your money and your credit and how you can get ahead in any economy. And we give you the tools to manage your money easier, saving time, reducing stress, all using the proven techniques from our Keys to Riches financial wellness series for you and your family to create unlimited wealth and happiness. And we do that each and every week right here. And we are so glad that you are a part of this show and our acceptance and affirmation day for season 10. I can't believe we're here at season 10. It's amazing how fast and furious this year is going. I wonder if any of you feel the same way. I know that I'm kind of blown away by it. Now, I have a wonderful woman coming up right now, and I'm so excited to have you meet with Karen Lee from Karen Lee & Associates. She's from Atlanta, Georgia, and she's a certified financial planner, and she's also does her financial planning services with Security America Advisors Incorporated. She is regularly seen on CNN, CNBC, all these great money channels, and she's an incredible author. And she is here to talk to us today about her latest book.
Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thanks, Heather. How are you today?
I am well. You know, it's actually overcast here in Arizona, so it's a little cooler for the summer than we typically
get. That's nice. I'm in Denver right now, and it's unseasonably hot.
See, you know, I've noticed the last few interviews, everyone's been saying, oh, well, we have your heat.
Yes.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay.
Country.
I'm just going to keep giving it away for those that keep taking it.
There you go.
So you have written an incredible book. And
thank you.
Tell the world, tell us why, if it's just money, does it cause so many problems?
The reason, and it took me a decent time in my career to figure this out, but the reason is that we approach money in our lives very logically and rationally, especially if you work with a financial planner. You know, this is how much you earn, spend less, you need to save X, Y, and Z, all very logical and rational, but it's not rational. Money is deeply emotional and therefore far more difficult to deal with than we try to make it sound.
And that's so true, because logic hardly plays into things, and it most of the time it just has to deal with the way our brain is set up. We're not wired to think logically first. We emote first.
One of the things I've learned as I was, you know, thinking about the book and then writing it is I've tried to draw a lot of correlations between addictions. Now, not to say that money always is an addiction for people, but my example would be you've got a person who's always complaining about their weight and they need to lose weight. That person's a college-educated person, let's say. They know the basic laws of physics, what calories in, calories out, you need to expend more than you bring in order to lose weight, right?
Right.
So how come they can't stick to a diet and exercise program? And my answer would be because it's not logical. They overeat probably for some deeper emotional reason. And that's what they've got to work on first. So I would say with money, and there's multiple sides of this spectrum. In the book, when I talk about money problems, we've got people on one end of the spectrum that are just overspenders. They're drowning in debt. But all the way on the other side of the spectrum, you have people who are compulsive savers. And for them, there'll never be enough. Both of these can cause problems in our lives and in our relationships and in our happiness factor. What I am trying to get started as a conversation in my book and amongst Americans is what's really going on under the surface? Why do you overspend when you know it's going to sabotage your financial goals? Or why do you continue to save to the detriment of, say, your partner's desire when you should logically know you've got enough? What's underlying those things so that we can try to help people start to change their behavior? So my book's the attempt to get people to think a little more deeply and a little less rationally and logically about money and start looking at the emotions that are playing out.
It's interesting that you draw that correlation, because I think of when you ask those questions, and you're kind of sort of asking it rhetorically, but I'm going to answer and say, most of the time I hear from those answers, like when it comes to the overeating or the overspending or the oversaving, they're like, I just can't help myself.
Right.
And I almost wonder, Is it that they can't help themselves, or they just want to be lost in that feeling?
You know, I think that a lot of times with an answer like that, that answer is a deflection. You know, the I just can't help myself. My next question would be, well, help me understand what's going through your mind when you go to take that extra slice of cake, or when you go to, in the case of spending, buy that item. So I just can't help myself. You didn't go deep enough in thinking, what's really going on? So I'm going to buy something that I know is going to make me unable to pay down my debt this month. Why am I going to buy it? And you, if you're the person on the other side asking the questions, you got to keep asking until you get to the core. So if they say, well, first, I just can't help myself. Why can't you help yourself? How are you going to feel after you buy that? Well, I'm going to feel exhilarated. Is that feeling of exhilaration going to last? Why do you feel exhilarated? Oh, because my girlfriends will be jealous that I bought these shoes. They've all been looking at them. Why is it important to you that your girlfriends are jealous? How does it make you feel when your girlfriends are jealous? Well, it makes me feel like I'm, you know, better off financially. Now, how does, you know where I'm going with this, Heather? If you just keep asking, you'll eventually get to the real truth there, which is, and the real truth with when it comes to the money and the spending is, you know, I'm lonely and I need a boost, or I'm mad at my husband and so I know this will tick him off, or I feel like I work so hard and I deserve to be rewarded. I mean, there's usually something like that going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so funny. I'm trying to retreat back to a day that I didn't know all of this, you know, kind of, because, you know, it was a struggle for me, you know, through my 20s. I was a highfalutin stockbroker, and I was just raking in the money in the early 90s where, I mean, you could recommend dirt and it would go up, and so it was really easy at that point to be a trader.
Yeah.
And I had a perception of what rich people did and how they lived, and so that's why I did what I did with my money and went, you know, crazy. And mostly I had good justification. You know, like when I would spend money on my house, it was like, oh, but I'm increasing the value of my home, even though, I mean, I'm lying to myself because I knew better.
Right.
But, you know, I still did it anyway because I thought that that's, you know, when you got to a certain point, that's how you're supposed to live. And I never bothered to look around to see what other rich people were doing, which was the entire opposite.
I think you bring up a great point here because I still believe there's a very, amongst the general population, there's a very big misconception about what rich people do and how they live. I think the misconception is that they live in mansions and they drive Mercedes and BMWs. They have, you know, new cars every couple of years, and they, you know where I'm going with that. And I think that that's a misconception. There was a really great book written, gosh, over a decade ago called The Millionaire Next Door.
I knew you were going there. Love that book.
Great book. And I recently did a segment on CNN. It was an article that was the top five traits of millionaires. And it's quite the opposite is what they show in that book. And what this article said was that actually the majority, of course, there's always going to be some different, but the majority live dramatically beneath their means, drive used cars, live in modest homes, shop on sale, and in fact, work extremely hard. So it wasn't get rich quick. It was hard work and discipline and then continuing to live beneath their means. And what I see in that, and one of the messages I'm trying to get across in the book is these people have a very high value on money. They put a very high value on it, so high that they spend it super wisely and cautiously. So the millionaire typically has that higher value and cautiousness. And so there's that misconception out there that, you know, millionaires all, you know, they either won a lottery, they worked for a company who went public and cashed in, they just made great stock picks, you know, they bought Google before it was well known, and it's rarely that.
Yeah, that's the anomaly for sure. And I believe, when, you know, I do this Millionaire Minute segment, and we went through some interesting characteristics a while back of millionaires, but something like 87% of them, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, are actual just college graduates and professionals.
87% were or were not?
Are.
Millionaires.
And or of millionaires are college graduates. So it's very rarely the maverick dropout that invents a widget and gets lucky.
Right. The Facebook guy.
Yeah. Who's just trying to outsmart the Winklevi or whatever they were.
Yeah.
It's kind of a funny movie. I never knew any of that stuff until I saw
part
it.
Part of my insight came from working with people of really a wide variety of financial means. So maybe on the low end, people earning family income of 50, 60, 70, 80 versus people with a family income of 400 to a million.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I thought, well, surely the people who have the 400,000 to a million have more to show for it than the people who earn 70 or 80. And as it was shocking over the years of dealing with people and their money that there was virtually no correlation. Sometimes the people who earned the least had the most to show for it. People who earned the most had the least to show for it. And specifically I'm talking in terms of their net worth when I say to show for it. Those people at the higher incomes might have had more toys and stuff, but they didn't have the net worth, the liquidity, the money.
Right.
So it came back to, and that's what really fascinated me and had me thinking, you know, so many people are suffering so horribly during this horrible economy, and it really comes down to this money value statement as to why they're suffering, not necessarily that they lost their job or their companies cut back on their income. It has more to do with all that underlying stuff, I think.
You are totally on track. My book coming out this summer addresses a whole lot of that stuff.
And we'll be right back with more Karen Lee. Stay tuned. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back with more coming up after this.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth Radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we are having just a delightful conversation with Karen Lee while our soundboard goes astray.
In your book, what do you identify as easily achievable obstacles to overcome when it comes to the different money problems? Is there one that's easier than another to overcome?
I don't think so. I think they're also generally deep-rooted and under the surface, that the challenge is similar. I will say, having never been a person that's had significant consumer debt and watching people around me try to dig out of consumer debt, it's really hard. But I've watched them do it over and over. I have watched people clean up their debt and move forward and live differently. But I know it. I can tell you, just thinking and talking about it just scares me. And so I think that there is, for some of those people, a fear like, why even try? It's too hard. But no, I can't say there's any one problem that's easier to overcome than others.
Do you think it's easier to reform a spender or a saver?
Oh, I would say that the chances of reforming either are probably equal, and it has more to do with the person's inherent willingness to be honest and to embrace change. That's more of the key ingredient than with they're coming from the saver or spender side. And I would go back to the addictionology and say it's very similar. Why does one person overcome an addiction and the other person doesn't? The addiction's the same, right? You got one overeater,
right.
You got two overeaters. But one person is willing to lay it out there, be honest, and go get help, whether it's therapy or a support group or an eating plan. That's the difference. It's that characteristic that is what's the most important to overcoming challenges, not if you're in debt or you're a hoarder or how much your debt is.
Mm-hmm.
That's my
what about your middle-of-the-road clients?
Yeah?
The people that don't spend too much, don't abuse credit, and they're average savers, they don't hoard. What are those types of qualities? Are the people that are just the middle-of-the-road folks?
Oh,
do they
exhibit
different traits?
Isn't it? Just hearing you describe it, and I'm thinking of some people I know who are like that, and I think how wonderful to not be an extremist on one side of the other. You know, what makes those kind of people, I don't meet too many of them. You know, I do find people tend to be kind of one side or the other and somewhat extreme. But they're out there. They're out there. They're going to be some people who pick up my book and flip through it and say, none of this applies to me. You know, I don't have any problems in my marriage, around money, my extended family. Everybody's sort of set financially. No one's super wealthy, but no one's poor. And no one, you know, when grandma died, no one fought over the china. So they're
it's
out there.
It's a surprising thing. You know, you think about, like when you talk about credit scoring in general, you know, 63% of the population has acceptable credit.
Yeah.
So in that regard, that number doesn't translate. You don't have enough middle-of-the-road folks. You know, the perfect credit people or the super bad credit people are small. But when it comes to the savings and spending, there's a smaller middle ground, and more people, I guess, are on one side or the other.
It seems to be, but my gut tells me that so few people are truly honest about their money life that we probably don't even have that information to draw the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know average debt in America, average credit card debt. We know average mortgage debt. We know percentage of saving rate, 5% or whatever. But I don't think we really have enough information to say.
Well, because all the other stuff can be tracked anonymously because it's recorded by banks and things like that.
Right.
But the other stuff is more of kind of a personal sharing, if you will.
Yeah. All I know is that I rarely meet a person in my life, and you can imagine I'm the kind of person that there's not anyone I won't talk to, whether I'm in an elevator or on a plane. If you're next to me, you're probably going to have a conversation with me. I rarely can bring up this topic about money and dysfunction and how people think and feel about it without the people jumping in and telling me about themselves. And one side or the other, they're a saver, but they're married to someone who isn't, or they're a spender, or they got this sibling who can't get it together. You know, inevitably, I hear about it. So it's got to be pretty prevalent.
But well, it's interesting.
For people out there who don't have challenges in their money life, God love them. We should probably try to figure out what makes them tick and what their perfect formula was. You know, and then the other thought I was having is that when I looked at the problems I see people have, that we spoke earlier on the one end of the spectrum, you're living beyond your means and drowning in debt, to the other side of the super saver, compulsive, potentially hoarder. As a financial planner, if I could choose which of those people either makes a better client or I'd like to be, I'd rather be on the saver side. than the spender side. But that I'm so security driven around money. Money for me is security, that I can, you know, for me, okay, maybe I'm a little dysfunctional. I'm wanting to save money and wanting to save excessively, but at least that's safer than the person who's on the edge drowning in debt. And then as an entrepreneur who owns my own business, I can still help the person that's the compulsive saver if they're wanting investment advice. It's really hard for me to help that person who's living beyond their means and in debt because they can't even afford to pay me an hourly fee.
Right. You've got nothing to work with there, literally.
Right. Right.
You're like, oh, well, let me see, you know. We all...
And I feel bad taking money from them. If they say, I really need your help and I'll pay you, it's like, but you don't have anything to pay me with, and I can't let you put it on a credit card.
Yeah, and you're going to borrow to pay me for advice to fix what's going on.
Oh, my God, right?
It's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I think about, you know, some of the family dynamics. You know, my brother and I, you know, grew up with just my mom, and support checks were always kind of sporadic. I mean, my dad always paid, but they weren't ever always there on the first of the month. My mom always had like a million little jobs, you know?
Okay.
And she always tried to work around our schedule so she could always be home. As we got older, you know, we became a little latchkey, but she was always around. We never had a babysitter. We never went to daycare or anything like that. And she used to always talk, you know, and I found out later that she actually went to some classes to get a job as an investment advisor for American Express. But she never followed through with it or whatever. But she used to always talk about mutual funds and dollar cost averaging. And, you know, and I remember that growing up. But then everything else that I remember is she always talked about it, but she never did it. She'd always tell other people to do it, but she never did it. She's like kind of a hypocrite when it came to money. But you should do this, this, and this. And it was ironic that I went into financial services and told everybody what to do with their money, but I wasn't following my own advice. And I was still kind of flying by the seat of my pants early on, and I couldn't figure out why, and it's all these fabulous injunctions that our families put upon us.
Right.
Kind of make us want to pull our hair out, because we're like, why do I do this? I know better.
Right.
But it's so interesting. Well, I've had such an awesome time chatting with you today, and I know we're coming to the close of our interview. And how can our listeners get a hold of It's Just Money, so why does it cause so many problems?
Probably your easiest bet is to go to my website, which is Karen Lee and Associates, all spelled out. There's a picture of the book cover on my front page. If you click on it, it takes you right to a link for Amazon. It's in print and in the Kindle version available. And while you're on my website, you might want to check out my In the News section. I've got a lot of articles that speak very to this point that you and I are discussing about the psychology of money and how money affects us in our lives that you might want to take a look at while you're at it.
Yes, and there's a bunch of CNN videos and things, too, so people can watch you in action.
Yep, I do regular spots on CNN, and there's some really good ones in there that relate to this, money in marriage, money in divorce, can money buy happiness, how to create a financially successful graduate, which was right from my own life of what I'm doing with my son who just graduated high school. So definitely look there, and you'll find some really good additional information.
Outstanding. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show. And for folks that are driving around and don't have a pencil to write down Karen's information, never fear. UnlockYourWealth.com is here, where we have links to all our previous show guests. Stay tuned. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we'll be back with more coming up right after this.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches, right after this.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We are having so many technical issues with this new soundboard they put in the studio.
You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and I am she, your hostess with the financial mostest. And it is that time again for our Keys to Riches. So welcome, everyone, and thanks for stopping by. If this is your first time at the show, we are so grateful to have you. You came by at the most opportune moment because we are doing our very first key now that the season is starting over in the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series. And for those of you just joining, the Keys to Riches are a baker's dozen of financial concepts that teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money. And we also give you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce and eliminate frivolous debt, and learn how to build wealth, saving and investing holistically, meaning we take into consideration the whole financial picture, not just what comes in and what comes out and what you have saved, but what you have invested, what you spend, what you borrow, how you leverage yourself, how you insure yourself, the whole picture. And we go through that each week, 1 week at a time, 1 key at a time, and we're starting over with acceptance and affirmation. And this is a very, very powerful key. And the concept or premise behind this key is simply that if you do not accept that there is something wrong, that you have an issue, then you can't move to correct it. The more you stay in denial about what's going on financially, the worse it's going to get. Because, like I just said, if we don't recognize that there's a problem, how can you fix it? Because you can't fix a problem that doesn't exist technically, right? Like in your mind technically. So if it doesn't exist in your mind, even though it may exist in reality, then you're not going to do anything. It's very simple. You can't solve a problem that you aren't aware of that's an issue. And you wonder how maybe in life when you have conflict with another person and life just goes and just life goes on and goes on, and then all of a sudden everything seems hunky-dory, and then someone flips out on you, and you're like, wah! And you're like, holy smokes, what just happened? I had no idea. And had you had an idea further along, you might have been able to do something about it. But now they're flipping out, and what do you do then? So that's kind of the premise that the acceptance and affirmation key holds. The first portion is about acceptance, and it's about taking responsibility for what we have done. And the word responsibility, if we break it down, it's not about an obligation, which is what most people confuse with responsibility. An obligation is a commitment you make to someone else or to yourself about something. But responsibility is the way in which you respond to that. And you might think I'm splitting hairs, but semantics and words mean things. And responsibility is your ability to respond to the situation. And I encourage you to go back and download one of the previous Unlock Your Wealth Radio To Go shows where we talk about personal power and what we can and can't control, because that is key in our responsibility. And you'll learn in those segments, if you go to the website, you'll be able to pull those down and see specifically what I'm talking about in the process of stimulus and response. And there's this space, and in that space, we have a moment to choose. So our ability to respond is quintessential. But let's say we accept that we have an issue, but because it's gone on for so long, or we've had emotional abuse or mental abuse, and our self-esteem just isn't there, without the affirmation side of this key, we're also kind of stuck because we're helpless or we don't have the confidence level to do what we need to do to get there. So if you take a look at the affirmation side, what we need to do is use affirmations to help build up our confidence and our strength and our self-esteem to know that what it is that we would like to do with our money is achievable. And on the outset, it won't feel that way, because of all the issues that we've had, like Karen was talking about, some of the emotional stuff that our parents put on with it, and that we're carrying all that baggage. So we need to have acceptance and affirmation as a twofold part. Now, affirmations are critical because they're like kind of an injunction. And what you're doing with an affirmation is you're telling your mind
not how you would like things to be, but how they are currently. And the more we hear that, we get conditioned to believing it. Just like you were conditioned to believe that you're not very good at a particular sport or skill, or that, oh, everybody in our family is fat, we're just big bone. That's just the way we're built. And so you, over time, after repeated exposure, believe stuff. Well, if we can destroy our confidence and self-esteem with repeated exposure, why can't we build our self-esteem and confidence with repeated exposure? Well, that's the thing. We can. But we need to do it in a correct fashion. There is a structure and a process to affirmation, because just like I split hairs a minute ago on the whole the responsibility and obligation thing, words mean things. Specifically, words mean what meaning you've associated with them, not what they mean in reality, not what the dictionary says, but words mean things based on what meaning you've given them. So when you think of a bum, what do you think of? Well, if you're an American, you probably think of the guy that's sitting on the side of the road, kind of disheveled, worn out trench coat, shoes with holes in it, and they're sitting there and they're drinking their rum or whatever it is. That's what you think of it as a bum. But if you go half a hemisphere away and you're in Australia, they're thinking a bum is part of your anatomy. So you've got meaning in words. Words mean things, but only the meaning that you give them. So that's why I'm saying we have to be careful when we structure it. And we have a six-step process to crafting affirmations. And when we craft our affirmations, they need to be structured so that they are, it's our six P's for affirmation success. And so they must be, it must be positive. So you want to affirm something you do want, not something you don't want, because the brain doesn't hear the word no anyway. So you wouldn't say, I don't want to be poor, because the brain's not hearing no, and now you're focusing on poverty. I want poverty. You want to focus on what it is that you do want. So you chase the carrot, not look over your shoulder. And so it's got to be positive, and it's got to be present tense, as if it's occurring now. I am. It must be personal. It's got to be about you. You can't make an affirmation about your kids doing well in school or winning the lottery, because that's out of your control. So it's got to be something that's within your control, like I will brush my teeth twice a day instead of once a day. That's within your power. It's something about you, and you're physically capable of doing it. So that's a good thing. So as we move through these, they must be practiced. And that's the key with these affirmations, is we must go over and over and over them, because that way the brain will start setting up these new neural pathways, because repeated exposure makes it so. So that's where we have to get. We have to focus on what it is that we do want, and use these affirmations to help build up our confidence and our self-esteem with altering our belief system so that we know that we are capable of these things. So our nuts and bolts for this week's key is that our key statement is that in order for me to change my financial direction, I must accept the fact that I have an issue that needs to be corrected. And then, in order to be successful, I must affirm my confidence in the skills necessary to complete my goals. And our key affirmation for this week is, I am a wealthy person. I am a wealthy person. If you start telling yourself that, you'll start believing it. And then guess what? It happens. Almost like magic, but not really. It's just the power of our fabulous brain. So I'm so excited about that. Well, we're here at the end of our show. You got to visit our website at unlockyourwealth.com, and that's where you will find our key strategy for this week. And so your first step is to take some mental notes and say, you know what? Should I really take a look at what I'm doing? Because next week, we're going to take action and learn how to make an organic assessment on our finances. Now remember, we've got 3 days a week of Unlock Your Wealth Radio to go, starting out Monday, regular Independence Day for America. For those of you that celebrated Financial Independence Day with us yesterday, congratulations. And you know what? It's not too late. So you need to get over to unlockyourwealth.com and take and make your financial declaration today. We are so thrilled to have had you on the show today. I'm Heather Wagenhals saying, finally, financial freedom can be yours at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Now, visit the website, get your strategy, and go out and make it a great day. Thanks for joining us, and I look forward to chatting with you again on Monday.